For a busy GP, medical documentation underpins every diagnosis, treatment plan, and patient encounter. But it's a heavy burden to accurately and manually capture this critical information. We've got to this breaking point now where the administrative load on healthcare providers is unsustainable and potentially compromises the very essence of what healthcare is about. Ironically, there's this opportunity for technologies like artificial intelligence to meaningfully support care providers, where we potentially can find this balance between technology and the human touch in medicine. With me today on the show is Linus and Kai from Lyrebird, as well as Danielle Bancroft from Best Practice Software. And in this episode, we talk about the struggle between delivering patient care and the ever-increasing administrative duties that plague healthcare professionals. The intricate dance of developing AI technologies that adapt to and enhance existing clinical workflows without causing additional friction. And the powerful potential of partnerships in the healthcare ecosystem to deliver better solutions to providers who can ensure better outcomes for patients. Collaboration starts with the conversation, Team Health Tech. Let's make it happen. Between now and the end of June, we're conducting the 2024 Talking Health Tech Audience Survey. This helps us prioritize content, hone in key messages, and refine the show to make it even better. We also want to understand who the biggest cohorts of our audience are. So I'd love for you to take 5 or 10 minutes to have your say and complete the survey. Everyone who completes it goes in the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of THT Plus membership credits to put towards a membership for yourself as an individual or to help get the word out about your company. The link to complete the survey is in the show notes of this episode, or just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey.
Welcome to Talking Health Tech, featuring content and community about technology and healthcare. We acknowledge the traditional owners of lands these conversations were recorded and pay respect to elders past and present.
Thanks so much for having me here in the this nice room with a great view with some cool people. So it's good to be able to connect and work out who we're with. So I might go around the room and first I'll give you the mic and you can tell us who you are, what you do.
Yeah, sure. So my name's Linus. I'm one of the co-founders of iBetterHealth alongside Kai.
Yeah, so we went to high school together and incidentally primary school together. And we only realized after we reconnected kind of later in life and remembered that I had sold Linus a chemistry textbook year 10 or something, which was kind of hilarious. I guess we can do also like a brief introduction now on like why we even wanted to do Lyrebird, because that's kind of part of it as well. So Linus and I effectively independently had similar experiences with the healthcare system and had always been interested in medicine itself. You know, for me and myself, around a year and a half ago, I really urgently needed to see a specialist and just kind of assumed that it would be fine and I could do that. But I made a spreadsheet and I called every single practice that was in Melbourne and was just universally told that there was an 18-month wait list at a minimum. And then after speaking to my GP and other, you know, family friends who were doctors at the time, it came out that it was just normal for them to spend 2 to 3 hours a day on notes. And that blew my mind. Mm. That was insane. That there's people that spend, you know, sometimes, you know, over a decade training to be in that consult room with you, and then they're spending 2 to 3 hours a day on admin tasks. Like, it's crazy.
So when I was like 15, I broke my collarbone skiing and then had to get, well, I thought I had to get surgery. So I like booked to see a specialist. It was kind of like a 2 month wait post breakage, I guess. And then when I get in there, I'm assuming it's going to be like a really nice surgeon, like a nice long consult is going to ask me all about it. And then I remember just going in there, sitting in, is basically just looking at the x-ray, hardly get an introduction, and then it was like, nope, don't need surgery, and like straight back out. And I guess that experience kind of jaded me. I did then see a surgeon from Melbourne Orthopaedic Group who figured out that I did need to have surgery, but it was like a pretty traumatic process as well, where I had to get rebroken and then kind of put back together. But I think like understanding that that's not the surgeon's fault that he could only see me for 2 minutes, but that's actually a documentation problem when I look back on it, is really important and like quite pivotal to kind of what we're building.
Yeah, interesting. And you know, you were probably one of many patients that day, and that is probably the most important thing for you that day, but that was another 2 minutes of that patient's consult, that doctor's consult. It's certainly not a uncommon thing, unfortunately, so a big problem to solve, We've got Danielle sitting over there as well, you know, just to throw things in the mix. But
yeah, so I'm here representing Best Practice, which everyone knows is Best Practice Software is a practice management software that's used by mostly predominantly GPs, but also specialists in allied health. My interest in the AI side comes from a long history of innovation. It's my background. But also I am a pharmacist. I'm also a patient who has a few very long histories with some pretty specific ongoing issues. So from my perspective, I kind of see it from all angles, not just from a patient angle, but a clinician's angle, and then also from a vendor.
The solution itself, so Liba, keen to understand it a little bit more, touched on AI and touched on this problem to be solved and the why. Tell me a little bit more about what it is and what it does.
Yeah, sure. And I think to even get back to it, like why, because AI for us isn't necessarily like the core of what Liba is. And so how we came about is that, you know, when we discover this problem, we first want to validate it. So we work with the University of Melbourne, their department at general practice, and effectively had this assumption that paperwork was a very big problem for doctors. But we interviewed 10 GPs in the department and asked all of them, you know, what's your biggest problem as a doctor? And of course, it was, you know, 10 out of 10 said it was paperwork and notes. And so for us, we set out to solve that problem, not necessarily to use AI. I think AI is a way to solve the problem, and it does part of it, but it's not the end solution. And it's kind of just a means to achieve something, but not necessarily the actual tool itself.
Dude, just to go back one, it's not usual for someone to make a spreadsheet when they're making, like, finding out which person to see. And typically, it would surprising, it's rare that someone creating technology would actually do any kind of survey. They kind of identify an issue and then just go, this is obviously something I need to build for the next 18, 24 months. What's your background? Like, what's the... What, you know, you've obviously taken a bit of a methodical approach. It sounds like you've taken a bit of a methodical approach. I'll have to learn a bit more about.
Yeah, so I think the spreadsheet only came in after I called around the 10th clinic and I realized I was going to have to implement some sort of system for this.
Yeah.
But my background is mainly technical. I initially did some work when I was younger at St. Vincent's Hospital in their ACMD or BioFab 3D research lab. And that was effectively working on a mechanism to 3D print a soluble mold that you could grow stem cells in to kind of create a bone that would be an exact negative of a piece of bone, for example, that would have to be removed during bone cancer, like a bone cancer surgery. And so, you know, for example, you know, at the moment you have to get a pretty crude metal implant done when you cut out that bone. And this was looking at creating the exact negative of what you would remove in bone tissue and just putting that back in and having it grow naturally. And that was incredibly fascinating. And it was effectively, I think I realized that working in healthcare has the biggest impact of happiness of any field of engineering ever. And ever since then, it was kind of just a bit of like an obsession, and then nothing else felt quite as interesting.
Yeah, cool. And so a little bit more, we touched on that, you know, AI being a tool and enabling to solve some problems. Talk to me about like what Liebert actually does.
So Liebert essentially, like its most basic, just listens to the conversation between a practitioner and a patient. And then from there, takes that transcript and generates patient notes. And then using those patient notes, we can generate all types of documentation that a clinician would need. So yeah, that's kind of like at the very core. And again, kind of as Kai said, AI was not kind of the foundational thing. It's like, what's the problem first? And like, we talked to so many GPs, I remember early on, we'd probably sat through and probably called over like 500. I remember very early on when we were trying to figure out exactly what the first product should look like, it was basically just like, here's a list of 500 doctors, let's call them all and see what their note structure looks like. Let's see like, how concise versus detailed we want the notes to be. And then only from that did we realize that, hey, we could actually use AI to do this.
Yeah.
So I think we didn't start with the technology, but we started with the problem, which is so, so important.
Yeah, well, that's interesting in itself, right? Because, I mean, Danielle, you obviously have spoken to a few partners in your role in terms of the vendor relationships and the AI side of things. It's exciting. It's going to solve a lot of problems. It's got some cool applications in healthcare. It seems like notes are kind of at the top of the near the top of the list for many different vendors looking to solve issues. But sometimes it's, you know, vendors with an AI hammer looking for an AI nail, if you know what I mean. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious part of whenever something becomes super popular is suddenly there's an interest. And I know that there's a lot of push currently from a lot of VC firms around, hey, if it's got AI, it sells more. It's kind of that.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting approach. But I guess AI is not always the solution, as Kyan Lannis has said. I think the biggest problem in technology is sometimes we forget the problem. If we understand the problem first, there can be a whole bunch of different solutions. I'd probably go as far to say as notes is just one part. The biggest problem and burden for GPs today is administrative tasks. It's the same for what plagues them in the clinics. But I'd even say it's the same problem across most industries. Administrative tasks take a lot of time and effort and energy and often detract from the job that you're actually or task that you're actually supposed to be focused on. And that's where, you know, you can get efficiencies from automation, not just AI. The more we can sort of take away those administrative tasks and provide efficiencies there, the more focus you can have on the core part of the task. And I think that's a better way to frame it than say AI can fix the problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell a bit more about like the notes and how that actually works in a consult? Because, you know, I'm very used to going into a GP clinic and sometimes it feels like the doctor's looking at the computer to write up their notes, and that's usually with fingers like this, or they're trying to. It would be a really difficult challenge in terms of being engaged with a patient, but also all these documentation requirements. So you mentioned that it kind of listens to a consultation. Tell me like what that experience is like for the clinician, but also from the patient side of things too.
Yeah, for sure. And so the goal with the library and the reason we actually listen in the first place is because the objective that we have is that you use the context of what a doctor would already be doing. So they're already going to be talking about the consult, they're already going to be treating their patient, and you use that as context to then do all of those administrative tasks Danielle was talking about, right? And so once you have all the context to do them, you can effectively do anything that a GP or, you know, clinician needs to be done because the information exists. And it's just about building the systems to handle that. And so, yeah, so for the moment, what that looks like is it will sit there, you'll click on or begin recording. And, you know, it's kind of like, I think it's 3 clicks to start consult once you've confirmed consent. And then it's just recording. You can effectively turn away.
I can tell you if I talk to GPs because you know the number of clicks.
Yeah.
Sorry. Triggered me a little bit, but that's okay. Yeah. Keep going. Sorry.
That's a big metric for us. Yeah. And so you effectively at that point can just detach from the computer and you treat the patient and you maybe have to verbalize something. So if you take a blood pressure reading, you have to verbalize what it is, and same with temperature. And then LabBird will take all that as context. And then when you click end recording, it will just generate all your notes. And then you can click write patient letter, referral letter, and that's going to take all of that context and write those letters for you in a hyper-specific way that's personalized to that patient. Hmm. And so then when we do that audio as well, having that process be really secure from a GP's perspective is something that has been a big point of effort for us as well. So when we do that recording, I think recording is a bit of like a sensitive word, but what we do is we listen to it in real time and then immediately turn it to text. So as you're speaking, that, you know, audio is getting processed on our Australian servers and turned to text as those words come out, and then the audio is immediately deleted.
So you can't go back and listen to every little bit and piece.
Yet. Exactly. Yeah. And so by the time you finish the consult, all the audio is already deleted and it's just plain text. And then if you never click save, that will be wiped once you copy and paste it into your EMR as well.
As you've said that, I can imagine that, you know, as these types of tools are used where there's the, for it to work, you obviously need to verbalize what's going on and sometimes you need to provide some prompts. Do you think that the way that a consult occurs and the way that a clinician's workflow will occur as more and more of these tools are used will start to change and that clinicians start to get used to verbalizing some of these things? Because it's, you know, we've got much more used to plugging things into a computer compared to writing it in a manila folder, for example. But do you think this is like the next evolution of how a consult is performed?
I think for us, when we kind of think about, like, if you kind of look at really successful kind of software products in healthcare, they're never ones that come in and promise to disrupt or revolutionize kind of the workflow. Mm. And so for us, it's really important that we build a tool that slots into the workflow with GP and not in any way kind of takes away from that process with the patient. And if anything, like, we want to enhance and amplify the workflow that they have to make it as efficient as possible. So I don't necessarily see like the note-taking process changing at all. I think like it's really important that we, and the way that we build product is like with that workflow in mind and not in any way wanting to disrupt or take away from that patient and clinician interaction.
Yeah, I think that's a sensible approach, because the last thing that we need is more technology that dictates the flow. And I think one could suggest that a lot of these points around clinician burnout or the frustrations that clinicians have on implementing new technologies because they kind of need to slot into how the technology tells them they need to be a clinician or an administration person for that matter too. So being able to have a lot of successful technologies from my experience have been those that operate behind the scenes and they just kind of happen, whether it be the remote patient monitoring tools or the continuous tools or the, in this example, it's kind of listening and doing stuff. And if you continue to tweak the product to respond to those situations, then that would obviously, I imagine, would help with adoption at scale and the helping those with that may not be as digital literate, all that kind of stuff would surely be at play as well.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that being kind of non-medical, we've had to build Libert in a way that is very unopinionated. So it can be adapted, like no clinician is the same and no note structure is the same and no document structure is the same. So it's super, super important in the product that the clinician can adapt it to their workflow, adapt it to their note, and adapt that to the document structure as well. And it kind of comes back to us being really clinician-focused and really clinician-obsessed and not wanting to, like, opinionate their workflow at all.
Yeah.
And just building a tool around them rather than building a tool that conforms them.
Yeah, got you. And hey, look, so best practice, note-taking is a really important part of a practice management system, obviously, and that's... The practice management system has been around for a long time. I mean, why don't you just build your own, like, AI thing?
The Talking Health Tech podcast has evolved a lot over the years, all based on audience feedback. Now I need your help. Yes, you, to shape the future of this show. Between now and the end of June, we're running our biggest campaign to date in order to understand what makes the global healthcare ecosystem tick. Last time we ran our Talking Health Tech audience survey, we learnt 40% of our audience are clinicians, 77% of our audience tune in for professional development and market awareness, 8% of people listen to Talking Health Tech for competitor profiling, and only 2% of people listen to the podcast to fall asleep. And this time around, I can't wait to find out about your preferences for audio versus video content, which topics we should dive into more, preferences for hosts and formats and geographical reach and so much more. And don't worry, we'll be sharing all the insights once all the responses are collected as well. So if you're a supporter of Talking Health Tech and you can spare 5 or 10 minutes, please complete our 2024 audience survey. And to say thanks for your input, everyone who completes the survey goes into the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of credits towards THT Plus membership. Go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey or the links in the show notes of this episode as well.
So I think that a lot of people are starting to understand just how big a practice management system is. The reality is that building a PMS, it's so much more than just clinical notes. It's gotten to a capacity point where it's a billing system, it's a charging system, it does payments, it does processing, it does clinical, it has an inbox, it has an outbox, there's communication outside the four doors. So, it's grown to a point where we can't build everything. Best practice has always been about providing tools to our clinicians that make their lives easier, but in a quality and safe way. And the best way we can do that is to focus on what we're experts at and then partner with those who are experts in other areas. We have a hugely rich marketplace and partnership program. We're very passionate about our partners. It is a two-way street. Our partners, we're equally responsive and provide, ability for our partners to grow just as much as we can, because our product is only as successful as our partners can be. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we could try and go and build AI, but honestly, as the person in charge of product, we have enough product. I don't need more in-house. I can't imagine adding that to the list of things.
Yeah.
And I think, Kai and Linus were really focused on the clinician and had aligned values, and that was really important to us as a partnership.
Yeah, I'm keen to understand that a little bit more too, particularly as, a strong vendor community listening to Talking Health Tech and partnerships with within the ecosystem is kind of what Talking Health Tech is all about. How have you gone about, like, say, that selection process in finding those key partners to work with, in this example?
So in this example, I had a lot of people, I had a lot of our customers asking about tools on the market. It was a new area and they were very interested in it. Initially in the early days, we had a couple of partners that had reached out to the partnership network and made initial conversations, but hadn't really progressed past that. So the partnership network is open to anyone. They can apply at any time. We do a review. We go through a technical review and then look at it further. So they had their first kind of conversation with us and then sort of went away. In the meantime, I was heading to Digital Health Festival last year, and out of nowhere, I got a message on LinkedIn from Kai. And Kai was very polite and asked if I was going and if I would mind stopping by the Startup Alley and taking a look at their new product. And I said, sure. I was down there for a couple of days, so happy to do that. In the meantime, I'd found out from Jess, our partnership manager, that Kai had also reached out to the partnership network and was looking into that. And so I got to the Digital Health Festival and I went over to Startup Alley and found Kai and Linus, and they sat me down in a room of 5,000 people, which I know anyone who's been there, it's pretty noisy, and demoed their product live in that room, and it worked seamlessly. I'm also the kind of person that's like, yeah, cool, it worked once, but let's see how that goes. when I got back to the office, had a conversation internally with the team, knew they were catching up with the partnership team. So yeah, that's kind of grew from there. But I think the important part of that story is what impressed me most was that they had took the initiative. Like, yes, they'd reached out to the partnership network. Yes, they were going through the motions, but they were so keen to have a conversation and really get people to understand the product that they took that extra step to go, hey, let's have a chat face to face. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And it gave me an opportunity too to sort of have a conversation and understand where they were coming from, why. The why was really important, I think, and that aligned with BP's values really well too.
Nice one. RIP to your LinkedIn DMs for this year's festival. But the but I guess that's a timely reminder then that the why is important. Having something to demonstrate and yes, connecting is good, but being able to demonstrate something
Correct.
Is going to be really important as well.
Yeah.
So you guys are, so for the Lyrebird guys, you're continuing to build out product and deliver on things. Like, so what's the scale of this thing? You know, the size of the team, size of the customer base, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's super exciting. It's been growing very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, last year we did some, I think it was roughly in the order of 50 to 80,000 consults. Wow. And we've already gone, you know, past nearly 500,000 consults this year that Lyrebird's been used in. So it's incredibly exciting. And, you know, the team's growing really quickly as well. Mm-hmm. And so we've got, you know, just over 12 people. And it's been nice because we've tried to kind of recreate what Linus and I had, you know, because we were working on together solo for about 9 months. And we're trying to recreate that culture in the team now of, you know, accepting people who, you know, only accepting people who are just obsessed with making doctors' lives better and delivering the best service that doctor's ever experienced mm-hmm. from a software company. And it's been really cool to see that kind of culture cultivate, I guess,
with
people we've brought on.
And does it continue to get, like, because you're doing more and more consults through and seeing more use cases, I imagine that's kind of a growing beast in itself. Is it continuing to improve and see different use cases and stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. So the spread of specialties that we're kind of being used in has also grown a lot. And so it obviously started with general practice and it's now grown. And you know, how many specialties do we have on the app at the moment? It was like 80 or something. Yeah, it was over 80 last time. We were like adding a couple each week.
Yeah.
And so basically making special models for each of those specialties as well has been super key for us in the sense that, you know, every doctor, even within a specialty, is so different that then once you go to level of specialties, it has to be like a totally different product effectively. Mm-hmm. And so for us, a lot of our work, you know, the last 6 months has been making Lyrebird something that intuitively learns from a doctor and becomes almost like a voice of them over time.
Yeah.
And that's been just absolutely critical for us.
Nice. I'm going totally rogue here and going unprompted, but it's the questions that I think about too. Something really hard to do particularly for a new product in general practice is pricing. How do you guys go about your pricing model for
So the way we look at Lyrebird, the pricing for Lyrebird, is that we're effectively trying to do the job of, you know, a human effectively. So it's very different to Dragon or the other kind of transcription software. It's like our goal is that Lyrebird should effectively feel like you've got someone in there almost with you that's saving you that level of time and doing the things that you need done before you even have realized that.
Mm.
And so the pricing is around, you know, depending on, you know, discounts and like if you're a clinic or not, it's you know, anywhere from $5 to $10 a day, effectively. You know, obviously, what we've seen in real terms is that we're saving around 60 minutes on average per doctor per day, and then that's obviously worth a lot more, $5 to $10. And so, like, we want to charge as little as we can to provide a really incredible product. And so, as long as we can get the level of revenue that lets us, like, innovate and build better things and also hold us to a standard of building a product that isn't just another drag and dictate, we want to charge as little as possible as well.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Yeah, because I guess, spoiler, if you want to make billions of dollars, you probably shouldn't be doing stuff in general practice. You're doing it for the right reasons is what I'm saying. So that's, but that's reassuring that that's where the core kind of value is. Keen to know now then, looking into the future as well for the business, for Lyrebird, and they've got the partnership to build on. And I want to learn from Danielle afterwards too about, you know, the more broadly across partnerships with BP. But for you guys in particular, as you're broadening out to different specialties as well, where are your priorities now over the next kind of 6, 12, 24? What can we look forward to seeing from you in this exciting and emerging space?
I think for us, at the core, we want to make the documentation so, so good. And you'll come onto Lyrebird like as a first-time user and the notes will be basically perfect. And then over time, any changes you make in the product will feel like it's adapting to you. I think there's kind of no cooler feeling in the world than you change one thing in the product and straight away it like learns. And so for us, that's a really, really big focus. And I think the number one kind of risk when you are building a company and building product is like splitting that focus away from the core problem. And so for us, we really want to solve that core problem, which is kind of document generation, and then move into more of like some admin tasks. As Daniel said, that's where the bulk of kind of time spent is. And so that's kind of what we're working with, best practice, which is like super, super exciting.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll probably let Daniel talk more on the best practice integration.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was just going to say, in terms of what we're doing, I would like to answer your question as well for the next, you know, 18 months of the product roadmap. Our complete focus at the moment for the next, you know, year and a half is to do anything a doctor would ever have to do that isn't actually delivering care. And so our goal is to have, when you're in a consult with your practitioner, the Lyrebird is sitting there and it can literally take care of all of that for you and have it be done before you even realize you need it, and just empower you to literally just see patients. And so that means, you know, people like myself who had to wait 18 months don't have to do that as much anymore. Doctors who have to just regularly miss family dinners every single day, that's just accepted. And you know what? On Saturday, they're going into the clinic or logging on to that terminal server and, you know, doing their notes and finishing them for the week. Like, that shouldn't happen. That's like our complete focus for the next 18 months.
Oh, good. Amazing. And so from the best practice side, partnership's obviously critical to the growth.
Yeah. So partnering has a number of benefits. I mean, both for the Lyrebird Health guys and for ourselves. In terms of BP, obviously has a very keen roadmap as well in the background that we wanted to be able to deliver on some functionality, and that aligned really well with where Kai and Linus were heading. We have a huge 12 months at BP coming up, significant new product coming to market. Another one that we're really excited for is Best Practice Mobile. The reason I bring that up specifically is that takes the concept of Lyrebird Health and puts it in your hand. So that BP Mobile allows our clinicians with a Best Practice license to be able to read and write in real time outside the clinic. So effectively taking and removing that where it is at the moment, as everyone calls it, on-premise, and providing our clinicians with the ability to truly practice from anywhere, but also to have access to improved administrative task management anywhere. So that's really a key value piece that I'm looking forward to later in the year.
Love it. Exciting times. We'll make sure the details for Best Practice, of course, are in the show notes of the episode and Lyrebird as well, so people can check it out if they've got more questions. But team, I really appreciate making the time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Hey, thanks for sticking around to the end of this episode. If you made it this far, you're the perfect person that I want to hear from. Our THT Plus audience survey is now open until the end of June, and I personally read every submission. In fact, if you leave a comment in the survey that you heard this promotion in a podcast episode, I promise I'll reply directly to you by email with a personal note of thanks. And I'll even buy your coffee next time I see you in person. It's pretty easy. Just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey and have your say.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Talking Health Tech. Make sure you like and subscribe and share this episode with someone who might find it valuable. For more information and resources about healthcare innovation, visit talkinghealthtech.com.